Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for the kind invitation. So it's good to follow on Gary, because I'm going to talk about poverty numbers, but I think it was very good that Gary reminded us what kind of people are behind those numbers, and so this is not this carries some substantial importance what we're talking about. And so I want to talk about where we are at the moment in international and national poverty measurement, and which directions we might want to go. You know, if we think about this, of course, poverty measurement is a topic as old as economics. Adam Smith talked about it. You know, you may even think Aristotle talked about it, depending on how you interpret it. So why do we still need to think about this? We don't need to think about this because we don't think poverty is important, because we do. Sustainable poverty reduction is in the developing world is the central goal of developing economics and policy, and I think we have done we've decided on this in the last 20 to 30 years, after a much greater focus on just economic growth. This shift has been to poverty reduction. So basically, what we need to do then, we need poverty measures that are reliable across space and time. And if we look at one that is currently in use, it looks like we have something there. What has started basically since the late 80s was this so-called dollar day measure promoted by the World Bank. And so these are the kind of figures that are derived from this dollar day measure, that poverty fell from about somewhere above 50% to somewhere above 20% in the last 30 years. We also see, of course, the progress was extremely uneven. In East Asia, was fantastic, from nearly 80% to just over 10%, while in sub-Saharan Africa, this poverty reduction was much lower. In fact, it's only for a while it went the wrong way, and recent years have been better, but not very good. And we're now thinking about the development for the post 2015 agenda, and lots of people are talking about getting to 0% poverty in 2030. Which this is not drawn to scale, would be challenging if we continue with this pace that we've had, even at the global level, but of course particularly for sub-Saharan Africa. And of course, if you're going to want to go to zero, you need to be zero everywhere, and that's why it's going to be so hard. But these are the numbers that have been used so far. What I will argue, however, is that there are increasing problems with this metric, and that we are at the moment actually facing particular problems with this, that poverty measurement at the national level, so this is the dollar day is being used mainly to think about global poverty and poverty across regions. Poverty measurement at the national level also still is faced with many problems. At the same time, we've had a bunch of new multidimensional poverty approaches to think about poverty. They are, I think, promising, but also still needs further work. And we've also thought about thinking about poverty in ex-ante sense, using concepts of vulnerability. I think they also have lots of promise, but we're not very far in that literature. So basically, what I want to review in this talk, the current state, and suggest some new directions. So let me first tell you a little bit, people may not know the details about this, how actually this international poverty line dollar day is generated. So basically, the way it is generated is it tries to ground itself in existing national poverty lines. So it takes a sample in 2008, they took a sample which is basically the universe of information that they had available for 74 countries, those national poverty lines. They translate those into PPPs, into international dollars at purchasing power parity, and then take some average, which I'll show you in a minute how they do that, to create an international poverty line. Then they take that international poverty line, translated it back into the national currencies in the benchmark here, 2005, and then you update it using national prices to get poverty lines back and forth. And then you measure poverty using household surveys with that national poverty line, which is equivalent to $1.25 a day across in 2005. So what's the picture they're looking at to get there? So this left picture is the picture that basically has shown the purports to show the derivation of the international poverty line. So what these are the 74 countries on the x-axis, you have consumption per capita, the log of consumption per capita, and on the y-axis you have the actual national poverty lines now translated into PPP dollars. And if you look at that, you see that it seems to be the case that for quite a large number of countries, there is that the relationship between average prosperity and the poverty line is constant, so it's flat. And then after a certain level of prosperity, after a certain level of income, then it rises. So you know, here you have Latin American countries, they are much richer, they have much higher poverty lines. Here you have most of African countries, but also India, somewhere, you know, India is actually here, I think, some poorer South Asian countries. And so the basic idea of the $1.25 line is we take the average of this line, and that becomes the international poverty line. The belief is it seems to be the case that national policymakers are saying there is a certain minimum that you need to achieve, and that certain minimum is the same for most poor countries. Only when you get richer do you want to actually want to have a higher poverty line. There are a bunch of problems, however, with this. The problem number one, of course, is a rather feeble empirical base of this assessment. First, we have a fairly small and unrepresentative sample of countries, 74 countries, which were just chosen by having a poverty line that one could find. That sample has shifted over time with big implications on the poverty line. You have very heterogeneous nature of the poverty rates that make up that sample. Some poverty rates are based on the cost of basic needs. Some poverty rates are based on some sort of social dialogue. Some poverty rates, like the Indian ones, are based on decades of discussion on a very complicated way of thinking about what it means to be adequately have adequate means in India, which is a source of huge controversy. So basically, we're taking a statistical average of something that's very heterogeneous. The third one is there are large residuals. So here is, I think, Tanzania, and here is Tajikistan. If we apply their own poverty line, the poverty line in Tajikistan is actually much higher at the same level of income as it is in Tanzania. And so the difference actually is using dollar a day makes the poverty line, makes poverty in Tanzania 40 percentage points lower, 40 percentage points higher, and in Tajikistan 40 percentage points lower because of this huge residual. So basically, it means that even for the countries that are part of the sample, it's not a, it's really, they don't really see themselves very much because of these massive residuals. And the last point, the last point are functional form issues. While Martin Revalian always shows this picture, the estimation he's done to derive this poverty line is actually based on this picture, the right-hand side picture. Now, the right-hand side picture has C, not log C, so this is consumption per capita and the poverty line. He says that this is generated a better statistical fit. But if you look at that number, at that thing, the king is over there, allegedly. It's not statistically significant, actually, of a king. And here are the 16 countries that make up the dollar a day average. Here, if you actually estimated this, you would have about 30 countries making up the dollar day average. So there are some issues of actually whether we are properly estimating this. I don't want to emphasize this too much because we then spend a lot of time doing this statistically properly, in which in fact would be a log-log specification, and then you would get a poverty line of $1.30 or so, or $1.28, so not a big difference, but there are some issues of not being quite straightforward how to actually estimate this. Problem number two of this is increasing irrelevance. So for the majority of countries in East Asia, Middle East, Latin America, the poverty incidence now is negligible. It's very low. We now have poverty rates below 10%. And because then we are now actually in the left tail of the distribution of these household surveys, these are very poorly measured. Because that's where, you know, all your data are, where households basically don't really, you know, where households report zero incomes, which is maybe implausible, where all measurement error is. So for those countries, I think the numbers are unreliable and not relevant. So of course, you could say, well, that's great. So if we can declare success, those regions are no longer relevant. That's one way of doing it. Or the other one would be to say, maybe poverty remains a very serious issue there, but we just have the threshold is just too low. And that's, of course, the point that Revel and Chen were making when they suggested the so-called weakly relative poverty, where they basically said, well, going back to our picture here, we should basically say if we have a global poverty line for richer countries over here, it shouldn't be $1.25, but it should actually be the line that's of best fit. And so basically, as you get richer, you should have a rising poverty line. Actually, if you do it this way, it rises less underproportionately. So it rises by about, for every dollar you get richer, the poverty line rises by about 30 cents. And so as a result, you have a poverty line rising with income, but not like in the European Union, for example, rising percent for percent, but less than that. So here you can see the results of that, for example. So if you take absolute poverty, so $1.25, Latin America went from 12 to 6%, and I'm not even sure whether we can believe those 6%. We're in the tail of the distribution, lots of measurement error and so on. If we took weakly relative poverty, the line in Latin America in 1981 would already have been $4.51 and rising to $5.93 in 2008. And then, of course, poverty would be 49%, going down to 45%, a very serious issue. And of course, the reason why it is a very serious issue is because Latin America is relatively rich and has very high inequality, pushing quite a lot of people below this weekly relative poverty line. Even in sub-Saharan Africa now, the weekly relative poverty line would be $1.78, and we would have a lot more people. And of course, as a result, poverty reduction in the world would have been much less. So here it was from 52% to 22%, I showed you that before. And with weekly relative poverty, the poverty line would have gone from 209 to 294, and from 63 to 47%. So actually we have been much less successful. And the question is that a reasonable way of thinking about it? I think there are arguments in favor of it. I make two. An empirical argument is China and India have updated their poverty line. They've raised it because they said our poverty line is no longer relevant. We need to have a more realistic one that reflects what poverty means in our countries. And I make a conceptual one. Amartya Sen was always arguing we should measure in terms of resources. Poverty is more of a relative concept, but it's in terms of capabilities, it's an absolute concept. And so what it means to be well-educated, well-nourished, well-housed, which is this basic capability you should have, just requires more resources in richer countries. And that would be and that's also in a sense what Revel and Chen are arguing with the cost of social inclusion, which is their argument for using this weekly relative rate. So I think there is some attraction to at least also monitor this and not just focus on the $1.25. Last point is on this increasing relevance was this rate was never very relevant for national poverty making and policy, because policymakers don't recognize that number. It's not really grounded in their own poverty measurement, and that has always been a problem. So, and I think this is serious. The third problem is level uncertainty. It relates to two different issues. So the first issue is that every couple of years we do these different PPP rounds, and which then tell us how to compare purchasing power across the world. So there were one in 93, one in 2005, and now one where it just came out in 2011. And in 1993, China was seen as relatively rich compared to other parts of the world. In the PPP rounds in 2005, then suddenly people said, well, prices in China are much higher, and China became 40% poorer in comparison to the 1993 round. And in 2011 round, they say, oh, prices are no longer that high actually in China, and now China is again about 30% richer. So basically, these PPP rounds have shifted the relative prosperity of countries around a lot. And it's very hard to interpret that. Is it simply mistakes that one round is better than the other? Is it that relative prices have shifted across over time that favors the goods consumed in China in one way or another? Is it the way we actually use the weights? There's details of how these international prices, what weights they use, and the different approaches. Is that the problem? And should you actually then, what the World Bank has usually done is to say they just rely on one of these rounds and then calculate numbers for all history, which then would mean you use the 2011 round and then redo the numbers for all the past. Now assuming again that China is pretty rich. The Penn World Tables used to do something different. They used to take each of the rounds and then mix them together with a process they call consistentization. That word doesn't even exist, and the process I think is pretty messy. Of course has the problem that you no longer can recognize the growth rates then, because when you're splicing together these PPP rounds. So there are serious problems of this, and we have to think about what to do about this. Now last time massive changes happened. Some of you in the room know very well about this. So remember when the change happened in from $0.08 in 1993 dollars to $1.25 in 2005 dollars, China in 1990 went from 33% poverty to 60% poverty, just overnight, just by using this new poverty line. And the world went from 29% to 42%. And so actually our Millennium Development Goal of halving world poverty was no longer halving 29, but halving 42. Which is quite a different story. Now, I think we got away with that because the Millennium Development Goal said halving, and level uncertainty is much less of a problem if you're trying to reduce something by a proportionate reduction. So reducing poverty by half, you can say, well, okay, if the trends haven't changed so much and the trends hadn't changed that much, we're just uncertain about the levels. Now we're halving this and the world believed it. If we now say we want to get to zero, we better know what the level is, because we can't spend our time every couple of years doing a new PPP round and saying, oh, the level is actually 10 percentage points higher or lower than we thought last time, because that's actually really going to affect how our pace, how we are actually going to be able to get to zero or not. So if we want to actually adopt the goal of getting to zero in world poverty, we better be sure about this level uncertainty. And let me make some suggestions. So the first problem is the the new PPB results will change our levels. And in fact, there are a number of choices that we can make how to incorporate them. So now the finding is they find China and India to be a lot richer than previously. And so the question is, what does it mean for poverty? And so now there are several choices that the World Bank could do. One would be to say, okay, we just use the new PPPs. So we basically redo our picture, our 74 country picture, but now with the new PPPs to derive a new poverty line. It's not clear, well, it would certainly be clear that China and India would have lower poverty. It wouldn't necessarily, it's not obvious what impact this would have on global poverty. It would likely lower it, but it's not entirely clear because it really depends on all the other countries and how much the poverty line is lifted. The second thing, of course, is one could also say, well, let's redo everything. Let's take a new sample of countries. Maybe we have now a bigger sample and redo everything. That's what they did in 2005 when they went from a sample of 20 countries to a sample of 74 countries. And that's actually the main reason. It was not so much the PPPs, but actually the change in the sample that raised the poverty line, the international poverty line so much, and raised the poverty rates everywhere in the world. So my proposal would be to say, this is too much for policymakers to think about at this stage. If we're now thinking serious about trying to get to zero on this dollar a day, if we want to keep that dollar a day to have any meaning, I would say we should keep the poverty lines as they currently are, based on the 2005 PPPs, fixed in national currencies, and just continue. So basically, in a sense, forget about 2011 and other rounds, which of course is a problem. But we cannot keep changing the levels when we actually have a fixed goalpost of zero. And the second point I would make is, if you want to, it really makes no sense to use 2011 PPPs to claim that they say anything about PPPs in 1990, let alone PPPs in 1981. And so this idea of always using the latest year and backdating it all the way to the beginning is conceptually actually not sound. So I think there's serious problems here. This would be a fix, not really a great solution. It would be a fix to save that measure. I think otherwise it's going to get into serious trouble. Let me now briefly move to national income poverty measurement and what that could add. Now, of course, national income poverty measurement works more or less well. It's alive and well, quite independent of this global poverty measurement. It works quite well in many countries where they have well-defined poverty lines, well-defined debates about poverty. Those are the policy relevant accountable processes that are taking place, and also most of the public discussion and policy discussion turns around these national income poverty lines. They of course avoid the currency and PPP issues, so we're just doing everything in national currencies, and rightly so. But here we also have a serious problem, particularly in Africa, but also in some other parts. First one is inconsistency of surveys. That basically actually getting consistent poverty trends is very, very hard. And donors have not been helpful because they have always funded one-shot surveys that basically had generated incomparable sampling frames, incomparable questionnaires, incomparable modules or recall periods. So I've spent a good deal of time trying for the Zambian government, trying to get a consistent poverty measurement for the last 20 years. It is very, very difficult, and it's an art, not a science. The second one is, of course, then politics intervenes. I can tell you my Zambian experience was the problem is, in the end, when you're trying to generate comparable poverty numbers over time, basically you come to a situation where you have to make expert judgments on things where, you know, in a sense there is no right or wrong answer, but the numbers matter a lot. In Zambia, The question was, one questionnaire had a catch-all category other vegetables, and the other one did not. And so the question was, well, should we keep that other vegetables in there or not? The difference is so big that it says if we keep it in, poverty increased by 5 percentage points. If we take it out, it fell by 2 percentage points because there was lots of people surrounding the poverty line were putting in numbers there. So it's very hard because we have to second guess what were households thinking when they're being confronted with this other vegetables category in one survey and not in the other one. We put our best efforts to put those numbers together. The Zambian government liked our effort up until the point where we then said our best estimate is that poverty increased. And then they said, okay, we're not publishing those. And so politics then intervenes in these technical decisions because we don't have very good comparable numbers, and this generates all these problems. And then, of course, we have the conceptual issues, how to update the poverty basket, which is a serious question. So the last point is, can national poverty measurement be used for global poverty measurement? And I think maybe, and I'm pushing strongly that we should try. That basically to say, what we could do if we actually spend some time becoming more consistent in the way we set poverty lines. And of course, we can do that as experts, so we can take those surveys and actually put in comparable poverty lines and then add up the numbers. Or even better, if we can contribute to an international process, similar to the process of the system of national accounts, of basically saying, here is a manual of calculating poverty lines that countries would adopt, then I think actually adding up international poverty from this national poverty estimates could be a way out in the medium term. I think in the short term there are some problems, but of course we have to do something about international consistency of surveys and the setting of lines. Okay, now let me briefly talk about multidimensional poverty. Is that the answer that which has recently been developed? So there's a first general issue: do we need composite indices of poverty rather than just looking at health, education, and other outcomes separately? There are clear benefits and costs for that, and I don't want to get into this discussion, which we can certainly talk about, but I think it can be, in principle, a useful thing to have a composite index as an additional tool. Then I think it's important to distinguish these national multidimensional poverty indices and the global one. National ones are basically idiosyncratic multidimensional poverty measures that have been developed in increasing number of countries, including Colombia, Mexico, Bhutan, China is doing it now, there are a whole bunch of those. I think they actually have great promise. First, they have high ownership, they're adapted to local circumstances. They can, in principle, I think, also move from the household to the individual, which is another problem that we have in poverty measurement. And they are in many ways easier to measure and communicate. So I think that can be an excellent complement, not a substitute, to national income poverty measurement. What about the global MPI? So this is the global MPI, which has these 10 dimensions. Health one-third, education one-third, and living standards one-third. And there is this dual cutoff method. So first households identified to be poor in one of these dimensions, and then you're called multidimensionally poor if you are poor in more than a third of the categories. So in both health or both education or living standard measures would make you multidimensionally poor, or any combination of those. Here I'm a bit more skeptical. I think it's still in its infancy, this measure. So it ignores inequality among the poor. There is some nice work by Nicole Rippin who's proposed how to do that, and that's actually something one should think about. It's a household level indicator, although in principle, one could do more than that. So basically, a household is non-poor in education if one person has more than 5 years of schooling, for example. You can measure individual education of all adults. That's not considered. there is at the moment, it's an absolute version. You know, should the cutoff be 5 years of schooling everywhere? Should it be in different countries different? So there could be weakly relative versions. And then a whole bunch of empirical issues, many weaknesses with the with the indicators. I can talk about this in a minute if you want to. The dynamics are very unclear because many of these issues are actually stock measures. You know, you have access to electricity or you don't, and that doesn't change so much over time. So some of the indicators are not suitable for dynamics. The cutoffs are sometimes inconsistent. One adult having more than 5 years of schooling lifts the entire household out of poverty. One child not going to school in age 6 to 14 throws the entire household into poverty. So it seems quite inconsistent. And then there are some problematic assumptions, particularly about those households who don't have, for example, school-age children. And so I think more needs to be done. Let me mention very briefly some further issues and then conclude. All of these analyses have been on static ex post analysis. Of course, we should really focus more on ex ante poverty risk. That's what the policymaker should really be interested in. How can I prevent poverty rather than just cure it once it is done? So we have a lot of research on shocks and risks, although not very systematic, but we know they matter. We have some descriptive research on chronic poverty of those who stay in very much. We have some interesting conceptual development. Stefan is sitting in the back there vulnerability to poverty. But we are very far behind on the empirics of this, which of course means that because it's very difficult, we need panel data. We need information on the distribution of income risks of households, basically in a sense about all states of the world and their probabilities, which is very, very difficult to do. We can get somewhere. We have some nice paper here where we looked at it. Even in rich countries where we have excellent panel data, it's pretty hard to predict who's going to be poor next year. And in fact, the best prediction of next year's income is this year's income. Many, many household covariates don't add a tremendous amount of that to it. So it's actually quite hard to identify those who are likely to be at poverty risk in countries. But I think this is a research agenda we need to push much further. So let me conclude. Despite much more data and hundreds of years of discussion, we still have great uncertainty about national and global poverty. In the income one, my proposal would be to summarize to fix the international poverty line in national currencies now. Forget about the new PPPs, because I think this is going to cause all sorts of havoc. Move to coordinate national poverty measurements as a slow replacement of that over time. In non-income, I think that these national MPIs are an excellent development. I think we're not very far with a global MPI, and I'm not sure whether, maybe it can become interesting in future. And I think there's much to do on dynamic poverty measurement, where I think we should focus a lot of our attention. Thanks very much.